All right, good morning everybody. Once again, καλημέρα σας. Εδώ το ρολόι στο στούντιο μας δείχνει περίπου 10:34. It's about 34 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we have shifted our Wall Street and our segment with Manny Frangidakis to Tuesdays. So Manny and Stamati on the line. I'm here with Costa as well as Professor Petro Vamvaka. So gentlemen, Manny, χρόνια πολλά, Happy New Year.
Χρόνια πολλά. How's everybody doing? Καλό χρόνο, ό,τι επιθυμείτε, υγεία, αγάπη, all the good stuff. How's everybody doing?
Χρόνια πολλά,
Μανώλη μας. And I hear a little child in the background. That must be Stamati's kids in the background.
Yes, of course.
Είναι ο Νικόλας, ο οποίος παραπονιέται γιατί έχασε ΑΕΚ 3-0 την Κυριακή. Χρόνια πολλά, Σταμάτη μου.
Συνέχεια παραπονιέται. Τι να κάνει το παιδί.
Χρόνια πολλά, Σταμάτη.
Όλο χάνουμε.
That's it. All right, Manny, let's roll on. Here we are, 2021. It is here. So, shall we start off with a quick recap of 2020 and then move on to what's going on?
Yeah, look, 2020 was a year that no one expected. And, you know, we were brought on with a global pandemic that brought everyone to their knees, economies, corporations, families, individuals. Everyone felt the pain from tenants to landlords across the board. But at the end of the day, the financial markets powered on strong. I mean, the large caps finished up to date close to 18%. Gold rallied 20%. You know, corporate bonds were up 15%. Literally anywhere you looked across the board, most asset classes finished in the green, besides some of the U.S. Short duration treasuries and the U.S. dollar. So overall, for financial markets, 2020 was a pretty good success for those that had exposure. Now, obviously, we've highlighted this a lot. There was a massive dichotomy between Wall Street and Main Street. So there is a huge gap there. The question is, you know, does that gap close in 2021, or does the, you know, does the wealth gap and income gap continue to expand to drastic levels? There's going to be a lot of questions in 2021. We still don't even have the clues to put together what it potentially might look like. Obviously, we should get some information in the short term, you know, with Congress approving the election results and the Senate runoff in Georgia. You know, votes will be counted today from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And that will be a piece of news that not only the market will be paying attention to, but most people across this country, barring the fact that, you know, the tax code could potentially change, fiscal stimulus could potentially change. There's a lot on the table regarding what this Senate runoff might entail.
Now, everybody looking long-term, and when I say long-term, over 10 years in the market, you know, the average return is, 7-8%. And so having a year like that, 43% in the technology stocks, S&P was what, 16%? What was S&P?
Yeah, S&P was about 18% year-to-date return.
I mean, at some point, you need to have a down year in order the average to work out to go back to the 7%.
Yeah. Don't forget, though, I mean, so the averages are over a historical period of the stock market. Now, you could have years of excess returns, but you could also have years of negative returns, and that could potentially be how you, you know, meet that average. But, you know, we outperformed from 2009 to present day. It's the largest bull market or the longest bull market in the history of the stock market. So we have taken gains forward annually for the last 10 years. One of the, one of the pieces that was highlighted on going into 2020 and looking at the next decade was, could there be a possibility of negative returns over the next coming years in the market just due to the change in the structure, you know, this of low interest rate environment, but more importantly, you know, fiscal deficits. There's two scenarios here with the stock market. Either that the stock market is probably overvalued by somewhere to the tune of 30 to 40%, or, you know, we have completely left the old way that markets were looked at and traded upon, where previously you used to buy a stock. When you bought a stock, you were buying a portion of that company's future returns. If that's the game that we're still playing, then it completely is overvalued by to the tune of 30 to 40%. That game has changed, and rightfully so. We have to take that into account. Now, let's say 10% of, you know, 10% of my thought process is to go towards maybe the game has changed, and maybe the game now is that you buy a piece of paper, and your hope is that someone buys it from you at a much more expensive valuation. That could be the case, and that could be the case that remains in place through this low interest rate environment. But those are pretty much the two opportunities or two paths that the stock market could take. Either we don't take valuations into account anymore and we can hit 4,400 or north in the S&P 500 this year, or we're overvalued to the tune of about 30%.
Yeah, but both scenarios, sorry to interject, but both scenarios sound kind of scary to me. You know, I'm not a market person. I'm like a social science person. And then you're saying, you know, on one end, we might be overvalued by 30 to 40%. But on the other end, if we're just exchanging paper and there's no value to that paper other than just the confidence that you put in it, you're going down a path that's really sort of like, you know, problematic, right?
I mean, exactly.
At some point, I mean, both paths are a little bit dangerous at this point.
I completely agree. I'll give you a perfect, and there's many people that share that skepticism, including myself. I just finished up with a client that I'm hoping will come aboard within the next coming week, but very, very successful gentleman in his 70s. You know, he was a pharmaceutical litigator. He just closed the case for a couple million bucks. He doesn't even want to own a stock because he doesn't believe in the market. And I think that's where you're at in terms of, you know, either you are playing the speculative gambling game where you're paying for penny stocks, or you think your stocks are going to double in a 1 to 2 month period and you're willing to take that risk, or you're stepping away from it saying, this doesn't make any fundamental sense. How could be something be trading at 45 to 50 times sales when they're not even really producing earnings at this point in time? So it is a very tricky game right now, and it's probably never been more dangerous to enter a market than it presently is today.
That's a word of caution right there. Manny, you mentioned the word penny stock. I had a caller, a listener who wanted me to break into today's conversation at some point to talk a little bit about penny stocks. We hear that all the time. You know, I watched the movie Wolf of Wall Street a couple of weeks ago, and it seemed that that's how the wolf had started because the commissions were so huge.
Yep.
So what exactly, are these a shot in the dark? What are they?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, they're low traded securities with very little market cap or market share. And mostly they're speculative vehicles. It's, you know, it's the essential of trying to buy Amazon at $18 a share when it IPO'd. I mean, that's the thought process, to be able to buy something that you're not going to get a 7% return on, but you're hoping to get a 30, 40, 50, maybe 100x return. That's the idea of penny stocks. Now, I'll also say it's not something that we play in. Because at the end of the day, we are investors and we're not speculators.
Right.
The way I look at penny stocks is it's essentially another form of gambling because you don't have enough information regarding the entity or the company to truly derive a belief that the long-term perspective might be 10x or 15x, whatever it may be. And that's why, you know, most penny stocks don't really appreciate. And it's a game that, you know, it is highly speculative.
So it's a game.
But in my world,
it's a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's another way to juice returns. I mean, it's someone that's not going to be satisfied with a 7% return. So they're willing to play elsewhere to either double or triple it.
Yeah. Or take the loss altogether.
Yeah. Most of them end up that way.
There you go.
But, you know, 2021 is going to be, you know, an interesting year. I mean, I think one of the projections that I have coming out is you might have volatility subdued for the next 6 months as we get more stimulus, as we continue the reopening process. But then I think that opens the door for the second half of the year to be probably the most volatile, that the most volatility that the stock market has experienced in a six-month period. I think that at the end of this year, we're going to start to get a little hairy where, you know, if we, let's say we do get a Democratic senator in the runoff in Georgia, the initial reaction to the market might be a slight pullback, but eventually, you know, maybe to the tune of 10 to 15%, but then I would imagine we march back higher, back towards the upper highs that we're at right now, probably remain that way for about 6 months. And, you know, towards the back end of the year, when we start talking about what potential tax policy changes, deficit changes, and different, you know, green initiatives we'll be putting into place, I think that that's when the volatility will step in when earnings will potentially be declining. And, you know, at that point, I think that's when Wall Street starts to feel the pain. So I'm thinking this next year is going to be soft to begin with, volatile towards the end of the year. And, you know, I think that we might even end the year down slightly compared to where we began.
Yeah. Manny, you brought something up and I'm a little bit curious about, you know, specific people who may have some substantial, you know, net worth at this point of their lives, ladder in their lives, don't want to play in the stock market. At that point, where does your expertise come in, and where do the people put their trust and money? What are the assets that will secure them? You know, listen, I'm good. I just want to make sure that that it stays there.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll give you a perfect example. So we run custom portfolios, and we don't. It's not a cookie cutter example of this is exactly what you're going to do based off of your age and trajectory. Everything in terms of your financial picture comes into the equation, including debt, primary residency, long-term goals, healthcare expectations, etc. Because at the end of the day, you know, to your point, some of these older people, they might not be able to take a 20 to 30% drawdown, nor maybe they have the appetite to take risky assets like stocks that are currently priced at right now are. What we've designed for these people is a custom portfolio that is, for the most part, fixed income products and bonds. Some treasuries, but not a great deal. I think it's about 2.5 to 5% of the portfolio, just given where interest rates are. But the rest of them are mostly corporate securities, preferred stocks, which is a form of a bond, convertible securities. And then because we're structured as an RIA, we can pretty much do a lot of things that wirehouses cannot do. And one of those things that we do is we use private alternatives. So, you know, a portion of it, probably 20%, will be in private real estate deals and in private opportunities out there in consumer lending and things of that nature. So outside of the world of just traditional stocks and bonds. And this portfolio in particular is designed to yield about 5% annual return while limiting complete downside by having no exposure to the stock market. So, you know, it's a great way to, you know, differentiate between, hey, my bank account isn't going to give me anything, but I don't have the stomach to deal with the stock market that is, you know, at an all-time high and has never been more overvalued in its history.
So
that's how kind of we bake it into the account. And then eventually when opportunities arise, when prices decline and we see, you know, opportunity to put dry powder to work, and that's when we probably reallocate. But for the time being, I mean, I don't really see a lot of stocks right now at all that I would be buying. I think that, you know, your upside from these levels is limited to a point of maybe 10 to 15% even over the next, you know, couple years. And your downside is maybe double to triple that. So from a risk perspective, it doesn't really make sense right now.
So are these stocks that you stay away from? I mean, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, which it caught my attention, is like, you know, the first half and second half analysis that you did of 2021, and I don't disagree, and I think it would just be a sense of, like, you know, how we move forward with not only with what happens today and tomorrow and politically, but what happens with the vaccine rollout and how successful that is, you know. But I think one of the things that will happen is also, like, you know, once the lid is taken off this pandemic and everybody can go back out, that's when you'll see, like, all the where we are. That's when you'll see, like, the ashes, if you wish, you know, from what we're experiencing. So is there an area that you're staying away from altogether? Like, this area is not coming back once the lid is taken off and the pandemic. I mean, you know, is there something that you're staying away from?
Interesting question.
I wouldn't say it's something I'm necessarily staying away from, but I do have some fear in regards to the FANG stocks. So your Facebooks, your Alphabet, your Amazon, your Google, your Netflix, companies like that. I do think that, you know, depending what happens with the Senate today and tomorrow, you do potentially open the door for regulation and antitrust. Mm-hmm. I do think that also these companies are going to face some severe scrutiny from China, perhaps not this year, but within the next 1 to 2 years. There is a chance that they probably, you know, aren't allowed to participate in the Chinese market anymore, which would drastically deteriorate their growth levels, including Tesla. I could see Tesla having an issue with China at some point in China canceling all their Tesla orders and going to NIO and some of these other car companies, including the fact that Volkswagen has already surpassed Tesla in Europe and and now is creeping into Southeast Asia. So some of these companies I do have fears about. And the rest of them are, you know, the work from home stocks that have drastically appreciated over the last 6 months. I can't imagine, I can't, you know, stick to the belief that that momentum continues into 2021, where some of these companies have just exploded in valuations to the point where the valuation doesn't even make any sense anymore. Yeah. So I would say those type of sectors I am trying to stay away from. I do think that the pivot from growth to value will continue. So I still continue to like the value stocks, including banks and some energy plays. So I would say I'm, in terms of my appetite, I don't really have an appetite for some of these work at home stocks any longer, nor some of these technology stocks. I think they've had a phenomenal run over the last decade, and you know, they're probably priced to perfection as close as they can be, which means that the opportunity for downside risk is there. So I would say from those sectors, that's where I would be, you know, staying away from, but then also paying attention to some others given some price breaks. I do think that the banks in particular, the financial sector, you know, leads the way into 2021, and it's probably one of the, you know, best industries to be allocated in. The other theme is that, you know, with interest rates declining and the dollar declining, these should benefit some of these multinational corporations. So emerging markets and gold and hard assets are still a great play in 2021.
Yeah. I mean, interesting stuff, and especially, you know, given that, you know, the pandemic goes away in 6 months, and given that, you know, we are out in the opening, because if we're not, then all of these things really change drastically as well.
Yeah. Manny, I brought something up a little bit earlier, and I'm curious in regards to, you know, we were talking, Mike Krohn was on before you, and we were kind of talking about the work at home model, and, you know, when it comes back, we're probably going to be somewhere in the hybrid game. And so what does that do to, you know, for one example, like the transportation industry, the automobile industry, okay? So with half the people doing it hybrid, that means half the people are on the road. You know, I mentioned, and I'm sure
I think hybrid's a different situation. So I think that when you say hybrid, when I think of hybrid, I'm thinking Mondays and Fridays you're working from home.
Right.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, you're in the office.
And the point I'm trying to make is that, okay, so that means that the family who had, listen, when I mentioned, you know, when my kids were both in early college years, you know, we had four cars. I'm sure your family the same thing, you know, four or five kids is four or five cars in the driveway. So as we change this, that demand is not going to be there anymore. So, you know, the family that have four cars will have two cars. But that means that some car manufacturer, some car assembler is manufacturing or assembling half the amount of vehicles. What does that do long term? Where do these, you know, automobile companies, what are they looking at? I'm sure their analytics are in full, you know, they're probably bursting at the seam. What are we doing? You know, are we going to have, there's a full industry in that. Domino falls into gas and everything else, and you know, gas stations and Jiffy Lubes and everything else that falls into play.
So I think that it's not as dire as you kind of spelled it out to be, because that trend already started years ago. People started, you know, divesting from automobiles a long time ago, including the fact that most people were starting to live in cities and most people were starting to use public transportation just from the standpoint that it allowed them to be more productive rather than sitting in traffic. So it was already a trend that had occurred. Another trend that's occurred is the fact that individuals and families no longer retain a vehicle for, you know, 10 to 15 years. The new trend is they essentially get a new car every, you know, 3 to 5 years. So we're changing vehicles more frequently, so it's supporting that market. Also, 2020 was a great year for the car market, as most people thought in March that, you know, auto sales would go into the dumpster. The opposite turned out to be true, that most people actually went out last year and purchased a major appliance or vehicle. Now, whether that trend continues in 2021 will remain to be seen. But, you know, I don't think the situation is as dire where you're losing, you know, you're going to all of a sudden see massive bear markets in these car makers with ramifications across the economy, that car service companies would then feel the next, you know, bit of pain as vehicles started to leave the road. I don't think that's an assumption we can generally make right now. actually, I think that I'm actually, for the most part, I'm fairly bullish on some of these car companies, including GM, who I think will outperform some of the other car manufacturers over the next years. I think GM might be the first one to come to market with an electric truck. And, you know, the game is going to change. It's going to constantly change. Technology is changing the auto market. You're no longer buying a car. You're buying a piece of entertainment.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Stamati, any input?
Well, regarding the car market, I think you got to look at it globally. I understand what you're saying, Ted, but the market is a global market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you do not see any downshift connection to the stay-at-home model. There's no connection there globally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think, you know, in the long term, the economy is going to be tied up a lot with what unemployment is going to look in 2021. And the income levels of 2021. So those are the real numbers that affect people's lives. I think the you know assets you know are at the highest level, but we have seen that for the last you know 3-4 years now. And with zero interest rates, you know you're going to have a higher diversity. And the people, the haves and the have-nots, I think that gap will continue widen. And mm-hmm. That will create other issues, long-term issues, mm-hmm. Like education and healthcare. That is beyond just money, but it is real life. And we mm-hmm. have to think about that. And all of a sudden in 2050, we're going to look at issues that they were generated last couple of years.
I hope mm-hmm. I'm around 2050 and make you know see if you're right or wrong, Stamati. First of all,
hope I make it there.
I know I'm not going to be wrong.
I'll be 91.
So.
I'm ready. Bring it on.
But I agree with that assessment, you know, full-heartedly in the fact that yeah, I think that the income inequality is a big one. And I think it's something that has a lot of implications moving forward. And I also agree with the global marketplace. I think one of the things that we'll be seeing is that the global economy is going to be shifting, and the U.S. is not going to maybe play the role that it plays today. So I think we have to make the assessment on the global level. I mean, we do have still a growing population and a lot of demand on all kinds of quantitative needs out there in Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa that's going to be coming in too.
I completely agree with that. The U.S. economy is self-sufficient. China's trying to become us for this reason. So we'll be able to hang in just from our own domestic consumption. But it is a global marketplace. Things are shifting. There's you know, there's some concern everywhere. And, you know, a ripple in one part of the world is going to affect the other. You're potentially looking at a severe double-dip recession right now in the U.K. And one of the surprises that I have out there for 2021 is you could see, you know, massive financial instability in France this coming year, just given their massive debt to GDP levels, ultra low interest rates, and, you know, the shutting down of economies due to the pandemic. One of the things that could literally potentially could happen is you could see 1 to 2 banks fail in Europe, and what are the ripple effects of that? So there are a number of headwinds out there. And Petro, you hit the nail on the head earlier when you talked about pent-up demand and when things open back up. I do believe that happens, but I do think that along with it comes, you know, a flash of inflation.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
did that cause the Federal Reserve that to have to peg the 10-year at 1.5%, which is looking like is going to occur? And then if that occurs, you know, does then monetary policy change? Do we then have to raise interest rates in an environment that is not optimal? If that's the case, then off the back, stocks are completely overvalued and will take a pretty big hit. So there's a number of different factors that come into play in terms of reopening, getting everything going, not all of them completely beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100%. And I think the point that, you know, also I've been following because of what I'm looking at is that what's going on in Latin America right now. I don't know if people have noticed, but Cuba just went to a single currency and Venezuela went to dollarization. So that's mm-hmm. also going to affect the U.S. economy in ways that we can't foresee. Forward, and I think you know. I think 2021 is a grand pivot year, moving us forward in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, dollar just hit the lowest level since 2018.
Yeah.
This morning, and that is very well correlated to what you described happening in Latin America.
Yeah.
And I do think that the dollar continues to decline. I did read someone that was bullish about it this morning, but I don't share their thoughts. I think the dollar continues to decline through this year and materially so over the next 1 to 3 years.
With the conversion, the euro dollars are 1.23 right now. It's something.
It's pretty high.
It's not.
It's not a good thing for European tourism.
For American tourists,
or European products.
Manny, always a great job. Manny, any closing comments as we enter 2021 for the listening audience?
Look, we left 2020 behind, and outside of the financial markets, most of the year was a disaster. So right now, it's, you know, let's focus on 2021. Let's get on the right foot. Let's continue to take care of ourselves and put our health first, because what we're seeing right now, and I think the numbers next week are going to be completely catastrophic, is that we're spiking like crazy. And, you know, if we do get this new strand here, you know, we're looking at 50,000 cases a day in the UK right now. That would be ridiculous here. So we have to do everything in our power to continue to stay safe and put our health first, and, you know, put our neighbors' health first and put the health of the economy first. We can't, you know, we can't take the risk of stepping back and falling backwards, you know, down this rabbit hole and trying to pull ourselves out of this again. So we need to continue on the path of reopening and getting things back in line.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, the next couple of weeks is really going to be, can we expedite the process of vaccinating people?
Mm-hmm.
I think the rollout that we expected has not come out to fruition. And it's much slower than anyone anticipated.
Yeah. Manny, listen, thank you very much. Listen, I just want to say for the record and for the listening audience that as we enter into 2021, Manny's been with us for a couple of years on a steady basis. Manny, it takes a village. And, you know, your contribution to the Greek American community through your knowledge of your expertise has assisted many people in kind of putting things on an even keel and trying to understand it. So listen, Agorimu, you keep up the good work. And 12 Points Wealth Management, thank you. Thank you to your organization for your support of our broadcast. I think it does take a village, and, you know, your little village home has, you know, a very special place in our broadcast, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Teddy. I share those sentiments. It's been a wonderful ride, and, you know, one of my favorite things is just being able to provide value and information to the community and with no expectation in return. To your point, we're a village, and we're all going to get through this together. So pick up your neighbor, go arm in arm, and let's walk through that finish line.
Amen to that. Yeah. Amen to that. Manny Frangidakis, Stamatis Astras. Gentlemen, excuse me, I got all choked up. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye, guys.
You too, boys.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Καλή χρονιά.